Welcome to episode 42 of Rebuilding Lives podcast, Stories of Growth and Redemption, presented by the Self-Development Factory. It was a Tuesday afternoon, 6 months into Michael's sobriety, when the smell of stale beer hit him. He was walking past a bar, a shortcut he'd taken 100 times without a thought or any particular reaction. But on this day, the familiar, potent scent was a sudden, unexpected punch to the gut. Instantly, his mind was flooded with a vivid montage of memories. The laughter, the easy camaraderie with friends, the deceptive, fleeting warmth of the first drink, and the subsequent blurring of the world. His palms began to sweat, a cold clamminess spreading over his skin. His heart raced, pounding against his ribs as if trying to escape. In that single, overwhelming moment, the pull of his old life, the comforting familiarity of past habits, was so strong it was almost physical, a tangible force threatening to drag him back. He had just encountered a trigger. For anyone rebuilding a life after addiction or incarceration, the world often appears to be a minefield of potential triggers. These aren't just minor annoyances. They are powerful sensory and emotional cues, potent reminders that can, in a flash, yank you back into old patterns of thinking and behavior, often without conscious thought or control. Understanding precisely what triggers are, how they operate within the mind and body, and developing a robust, proactive plan to effectively manage them is not merely a helpful strategy or an optional step. It is, in fact, a fundamental and indispensable pillar of lasting recovery. It's the intricate art of learning to carefully navigate this metaphorical minefield, moving forward day by day, without setting off an explosion that could undo all the hard-won progress. What is a trigger? Understanding the science behind the ambush. A trigger is any internal or external stimulus that your brain has learned to associate with a past behavior, particularly a deeply rewarding one like using a substance. Our brains are incredibly powerful association machines, constantly forging connections to make sense of the world. During a period of active addiction, the brain works overtime, creating strong, almost instantaneous links between specific people, certain places, tangible things, or even powerful feelings in the act of using. When you encounter one of these cues later on, even long into recovery, the brain's reward system can light up, creating an intense, often overwhelming craving and a powerful urge to repeat the behavior you've worked so hard to leave behind. It's crucial to understand that this is not a matter of weak willpower or a lack of commitment to your recovery. It's a neurological ambush. These triggers activate the very same neural pathways that were meticulously built and reinforced, sometimes over many years, of substance use. Dr. Anna Rose Childress, a leading researcher in the field of addiction neuroscience at the University of Pennsylvania, has provided clear evidence of this process. Using advanced brain imaging techniques, her work demonstrates that merely seeing a picture of drug paraphernalia can cause a significant reaction in the brains of individuals with a substance use disorder. Specifically, the amygdala, the brain's center for emotion, memory, and threat detection, and the dopamine system, the primary reward pathway, fire up almost instantly. In essence, your brain is screaming, "I remember this. This feels good. Do it now," without any conscious input from you. Grasping the science behind triggers is incredibly empowering because it reframes the entire experience. It helps to remove the heavy burden of shame and self-blame that so often accompanies a sudden, intense craving. Experiencing a trigger is not a moral failure or a sign that you are failing at recovery. It is a predictable biological brain response. And just like any learned response, it can be managed, it can be redirected, and with consistent effort and time, its power can be significantly weakened. Unmasking your personal triggers. Triggers are deeply personal and can differ greatly from one person to another. What may feel insignificant to someone else could be a powerful cue for you. The first and most essential step in managing triggers is to identify your own unique set. Triggers generally fall into a few broad categories, but the specifics are unique to your experiences. Taking the time to map out your personal triggers is like creating a detailed battle plan. It prepares you to anticipate challenges instead of always reacting to them. This proactive approach can make all the difference in maintaining control and building resilience. 1. External triggers. The people, places, and things around you. External triggers are often the easiest to identify because they are tied to physical cues in your environment. People, places, objects, or specific situations that your brain associates with past substance use or harmful behavior. These triggers can feel like landmines in your daily life, instantly reactivating memories, emotions, and even physical cravings. By recognizing these cues, you can actively avoid or prepare for them. People. Perhaps the most challenging category, people triggers include those you were closely connected with during your past behavior. Whether they were old using buddies, dealers, or even friends who unknowingly contributed to unhealthy habits. Running into these individuals can instantly bring back the dynamics and urges tied to your past. For example, an old friend who always encouraged just one drink or someone who wasn't supportive of your recovery might trigger those same feelings today. Places. Certain locations hold strong memories. It could be a bar you frequented, a street corner where you made purchases, or even a park or neighborhood tied to substance use. The brain's memory is highly contextual, and stepping back into these places can evoke a conditioned response that feels automatic. For instance, walking past the bar you used to visit after work could reignite thoughts like, "I always stopped here to unwind." Things, objects. Even seemingly innocuous objects can be potent triggers. Items like pipes, needles, beer bottles, or even unrelated items like a razor blade or a rolled-up dollar bill can stir intense cravings due to their association with past behavior. For instance, seeing a specific brand of alcohol in a store or on TV might bring up memories of drinking. Situations. Certain events or scenarios can also act as powerful external triggers. Concerts, parties, holidays, or even receiving your paycheck could be triggers if those moments were linked to past substance use. Likewise, routine scenarios like the end of a stressful workday might cue cravings if they were habitually followed by using as a way to unwind. Action step. Take a piece of paper and create 4 columns labeled people, places, things, and situations. Under each column, list every specific trigger you can think of. Be brutally honest with yourself. This list is for your eyes only. Identify even the smallest cues that could pose a risk. This exercise is your personal threat assessment, giving you the insight to plan for and avoid situations that could lead to relapse. 2. Internal triggers. The invisible battlefield within you. Internal triggers can be harder to identify and manage than external ones because they come from within. You can't simply avoid them. These triggers stem from your own thoughts, emotions, and physical sensations, which makes them more subtle but just as powerful. Understanding your internal landscape is a critical part of staying ahead of potential challenges. Emotions. Emotional states are one of the most common internal triggers. The acronym HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, highlights 4 common states that leave you particularly vulnerable. When you're feeling any of these, it's easier to fall into old habits as a way of coping. However, the list doesn't stop there. Other emotions like stress, anxiety, boredom, depression, sadness, shame, and guilt can also trigger cravings. Even positive emotions such as excitement or celebration can be dangerous if they were tied to substance use in the past. For example, you might find yourself craving a drink at a party where you're feeling happy but also reminded of past celebrations. Thoughts. The way you talk to yourself also plays a significant role. Negative self-talk, feelings of hopelessness, why even try, or romanticizing the past, it wasn't that bad back then, can set the stage for a relapse. These thoughts can sneak in during moments of weakness, making it essential to recognize and challenge them before they spiral. Physical sensations. Physical feelings can also serve as triggers, especially if they remind you of past experiences. This could include withdrawal symptoms, pain, or even feelings of sexual arousal, if those sensations were previously linked to substance use. For instance, a headache might remind you of how you used to self-medicate with alcohol, or a racing heart could echo the physical effects of past substance use. Action step. On a separate sheet of paper, create a list of feelings, thoughts, and physical sensations that often preceded your desire to use in the past. Reflect deeply. What were the emotions you felt right before you picked up a drink or drug? Were you lonely, stressed, or bored? Perhaps you were celebrating a small victory but didn't know how to mark the occasion without turning to old habits. This map of your internal triggers is just as vital as your map of external ones, equipping you with the knowledge to address your vulnerabilities head-on. By identifying both external and internal triggers, you gain a clearer understanding of the challenges you face. This awareness allows you to anticipate and prepare for moments of vulnerability, making it easier to stay in control and continue building a healthier, more intentional life. The three-pronged strategy: avoid, escape, endure. Once you have identified your triggers, you can develop a proactive plan to deal with them. This plan generally involves a combination of three core strategies: avoiding the trigger when possible, escaping it when you can't, and learning to endure it when you must. 1. The strategy of avoidance. This is your first and best line of defense, especially in early recovery when your coping skills are still developing. It is not a sign of weakness to avoid high-risk situations. It is a sign of intelligence and a commitment to your sobriety. Change your environment. This might mean changing your phone number to avoid calls from old contacts. It means deleting dealer's numbers. It means taking a different route home to avoid passing your old bar. Set clear boundaries. You must be prepared to end or change relationships that threaten your recovery. This is incredibly difficult, but necessary. You may need to have honest conversations with friends and family, explaining what you need from them and what situations you can no longer be a part of. Plan ahead. Before going into any situation, ask yourself, what is the risk level here? If you have to attend a family wedding where alcohol will be served, plan your avoidance strategy. Bring your own non-alcoholic drink. Have an escape call planned with your sponsor. Position yourself away from the bar. Avoidance is not a permanent solution for all triggers, but it is an essential tool that buys you the time and space needed to build stronger coping mechanisms. 2. The strategy of escape. Sometimes, despite your best planning, you will find yourself ambushed by a trigger. In these moments, your goal is not to be a hero and tough it out. Your goal is to escape the situation as quickly and safely as possible. Have an exit strategy. Never go into a potentially risky situation without knowing how you will leave. This could be driving yourself so you aren't dependent on someone else for a ride or having enough money for a taxi or rideshare. Use your phone. Your phone is your lifeline. The moment you feel triggered, step outside and call your sponsor, a trusted friend, or someone from your support network. Talking it through can break the trigger's spell. Create a go-to excuse. You don't owe anyone a detailed explanation. Have a simple, pre-planned reason to leave. I'm not feeling well. Or, I have an early morning tomorrow, are perfectly acceptable. Your sobriety is more important than someone else's opinion. 3. The strategy of enduring, riding the wave. You cannot avoid all triggers. Internal triggers like stress, anger, and loneliness are a part of the human experience. You cannot escape your own feelings. This is where you must learn to endure, to sit with the discomfort of a craving until it passes without acting on it. This is a skill, and it gets stronger with practice. Urge surfing. This is a mindfulness technique where you learn to view a craving like an ocean wave. It builds in intensity, peaks, and then naturally subsides. The average craving lasts for about 15 to 20 minutes. Instead of fighting the wave, you can learn to surf it by observing the sensations in your body without judgment. Notice the tightness in your chest, the thoughts in your head. Acknowledge them. Breathe through them and know that they will pass. Play the tape through. This is a powerful cognitive tool. When a trigger makes you romanticize using, play the tape all the way to the end. Don't just think about the temporary relief of the first drink. Think about the second, the 10th, the blackout. Think about the hangover, the shame, the money spent, the broken promises, and the potential consequences like jail or overdose. Remembering the full, painful reality is a potent antidote to a fleeting craving. Engage in distraction. Find a healthy activity that requires your full attention. This is not about suppressing the feeling, but about redirecting your focus. Call a friend and talk about something completely different. Go for a hard run. Play a musical instrument. Watch a comedy. Do a complex puzzle. Use your senses. The 5-4-3-2-1 method. When you're caught in an internal trigger, ground yourself in the present moment. Look around and name 5 things you can see. 4 things you can feel. The chair beneath you. The texture of your clothes. 3 things you can hear. 2 things you can smell. 1 thing you can taste. This simple exercise pulls your brain out of the craving and back into the safety of the present reality. Building a trigger-resistant life. Over time, recovery moves beyond simply managing triggers to building a life that is naturally more resistant to them. This happens when you fill your life with new, healthy sources of reward and meaning. When you have a job you find fulfilling, hobbies you are passionate about, and relationships that are built on trust and mutual respect, the old triggers begin to lose their power. The brain starts to form new associations. A stressful day is no longer a cue to drink. It becomes a cue to go to the gym or call a friend. A celebration is no longer a cue for cocaine. It's a cue for a special dinner with loved ones. You are not just avoiding the old life. You are actively building a new one that is far more rewarding. This is a long-term project. It requires patience and self-compassion. There will be days when a trigger catches you off guard and knocks you down. The goal is not to never get knocked down. The goal is to get up one more time than you fall, armed with more knowledge and a stronger plan for the next time. Michael, walking away from that bar, did not fight the craving with brute force. He pulled out his phone and called his sponsor, Escape. He walked to a nearby park and focused on the feeling of the sun on his face. Enduring. He played the tape through, remembering the crushing hangovers and the night he spent in a jail cell. By the time the call was over, the wave had crested and was already receding. It hadn't been easy, but he had survived the ambush. He had taken another step on the path of rebuilding his life, not by being fearless, but by being prepared. And in the world of recovery, preparation is freedom. As we wrap up today's episode, let's take a moment to reflect on the power of preparation in the journey of recovery and growth. Being prepared isn't about avoiding life's challenges. It's about equipping ourselves to face them head on. Whether it's reaching out to a trusted sponsor, grounding yourself in the present moment, or replaying the consequences of past decisions, these small but intentional actions create a foundation for resilience. Remember, each step forward, no matter how small, is progress. Thank you for joining us in this discussion, and we hope it has offered you a sense of encouragement and practical tools to carry with you. Until next time, take care and keep striving, because preparation truly is freedom.